I think I just see these young girls in the water and I'm just drawn to talking to them. I think they're so cool and like love that they're charging and kind of like sticking it to the man, you know, because surfing is such a male dominant sport. So like you saw me with all the ladies, it's like, I love when all the girls paddle out and I see them in that world surfing. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, they send it on all these crazy waves and they love surfing hard. What would they be like if we went backpacking or rock climbing or snowboarding? And kind of giving them those first experiences has been like so fun for me.
Hello and welcome to Wilding 50. I am your host, Christine Forrester. In this podcast, I will be interviewing surfers from my local breaks and beyond following a surf session. Whether you are learning to surf like me, keen on new adventures, or in the mood for a good conversation, I hope you will find some inspiration with these surf tales. In this week's episode with Riley Owens, we talk about surfing with women, her top rules for surf etiquette, how a lifetime of sports led her to pick up surfing as an adult, living in a trailer and living frugally to gain 5 months of freedom every year, and her love of mentoring the next generation of women surfers. Riley sheds grace on all of these subjects.
Hey, Riley.
Hey.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
It was so kind of you to meet me in the water the other day because we don't even know each other. Yeah. We didn't at that moment.
Yeah. I got your name in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that day, I remember I paddled out about 7:45 and you had been there since 6:30 in the morning.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I found myself surrounded by women.
Totally.
It was so cool. Like I looked in every direction multiple times and there's like woman here, woman there, woman there.
Yeah.
So is that normal for you to swim with a lot of women?
Yeah.
That...
Yeah. It wasn't at first when I first started surfing, but now it's a very frequent thing. Yeah. Got a lot of friends that surf. So yeah, I surf alone a lot, but when I know people want to surf or if people are in town, or it's you're feeling social, it's like you just want to tell everyone where you're going just so you can all hang out. And especially if it's small, it's more going to be like a chatty day, mm-hmm. you know?
You also said something about you were concerned about the tide moving in. And mm-hmm. you talked about it in terms of the reef. So can you just elaborate on that specific place we were there at Terramar?
Yeah, Terramar doesn't really handle a high tide very well. There's that cliff right there. And so as the tide pushes in and more water comes through, the waves tend to just kind of roll over the reef rather than break on the reef. You'll tend to get a lot of really softer waves unless there's like a bigger set, unless there's more swell in the water. But because the swell was dying and the tide was really high, that's why people were struggling to catch waves, or longboarders were catching more of the waves because they were able to catch them further out.
And that day you were on a pretty short board, right?
Yeah, I paddled out on my 5'5" fish, but then my neighbor was out. And so we live right next to each other. She's actually my landlord, kind of. I like asked her if she wanted to switch because she had to go in to feed her kid. Mm-hmm. She just had a baby. She let me use her mid-length. So that was like about a foot longer than what I was on and more foam under me. So it was easier to paddle into waves because on a shorter board, you just need a little bit more of a push. And that wasn't really happening that day.
Still caught some nice rides though.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But on my short board, I was like, you know, paddling in circles, trying to fight for waves with the guys on like the 10-foot board.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it was still fun.
Yeah.
I didn't have like super high expectations.
So. Yeah, that's the best way to go out.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So one of the things that we talked a little bit about was etiquette. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that since during COVID, a lot of people, right, were pushed out of the gyms and at home mm-hmm. working. And so there were tons of people learning to surf.
Yeah.
And that has meant that there are now a lot of newbies on the water without an understanding of etiquette.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that you might go through what you think, I don't know, your top rules, if you could go through what
sure.
you think are the best rules of etiquette
mm-hmm.
for people that are listening that might want a little bit of a breakdown of that.
Definitely. Yeah, I've been surfing for a handful of years and, you know, I taught myself at 23. So everything that I would say and as far as etiquette goes comes from someone who was a beginner at an older age, who didn't know surf etiquette. And, you know, tries to give a lot of grace in that aspect too. Whereas I know a lot of the kids I mentor and hang out with or people who are from here, they're a little, I think, less impatient because they've grown up surfing and they know it at a young age. you get a mix of people in the water where you got old local guys who are super grungy and like mad that there's a bunch of people surfing. And then you have some in between people, and then you have people who don't know what's going on. And so I think the biggest thing is we live in San Diego and North County, where there's a plethora of waves that are all different kinds. And we tend to pick up a lot of swell throughout the year that's surfable. And then it's also very crowded. So my biggest thing in the last few years has been taking off on a wave. You know, once you've grown past the whitewash phase, where you're just catching the wave as it's already broken, and you're trying to catch face waves that have more shape, or they have like a direction to them, it's learning the wave and where to be on the wave and how the wave is breaking and if someone is already on the wave and if you should sit back and not go, or how you can kick out of a wave if someone's already there. If you notice people surfing, you know, Grandview this morning, a wave comes through, there's gonna be like six people paddling for one wave. You know, it's just pure chaos. Whereas you go to other places in the world or other places, you know, in general, there might not be that many people surfing, or there's more of like a hierarchy happening. And so if you're gonna all paddle for a wave, you have to be looking down the line or behind you technically on, you know, if the wave is breaking on your left, looking at the whitewash and who's closer to the pocket of the wave and see if someone's already on it. And if that's the case, back off of the wave, or if you know how to kick out, because a lot of people will drop in and go straight because they're learning and either cut you off or could run into you, or, you know, run your board over. I've had my board run over a handful of times. And that's, you know, money out of your pocket having to fix it. Or there could be like a collision, you know, being mindful of other people and knowing like, oh, I need to actually look before I go. It's like if you're at a turn on a street, you know, like right. You gotta look before you go.
And what you're describing, these six people on a wave, because I've seen that at Terramar all the time, yeah. Right? That the wave's happening and then mm-hmm. everybody's paddling for it. But mm-hmm. what you're saying, that if you are one of those six people, everybody needs to be looking very carefully all the time, because some, obviously of the six people, it seems like usually mm-hmm. one or two may actually catch it.
Sure.
So then that's part of it, I guess, is that mm-hmm. everybody kind of wants that opportunity, but you have to, if you're in putting yourself in that position, mm-hmm. you also have to have that technique or that know-how of how to back off or kick out or any of those things, so that if you are in somebody's way that you're moving out in time.
Yeah. You have to be vocal about it too. You know, it's hard when people aren't reading each other's minds, or there's so many different situations too. Yeah, typically the person who is deeper than you, if the wave, like if it's a right at Terramar, the person who's furthest left and the wave is breaking and that person stands up first and is on the wave, that's technically their priority, you know, because right. they're moving at a higher speed on the wave first. I mean, there's sometimes people who, you know, stand up maybe second, or this goes into back paddling, but whoever's like standing up first technically is like, oh, you're on the wave. But then back paddling, what we talked about in the water is
can you go over that again?
So say I'm sitting there waiting for a wave and, it's a right. So we're facing out at the ocean and I'm sitting there. Say you're on the left of me and a wave comes through and I turn to go, on the wave. You would then paddle fully around me. Behind me, back paddle me, okay. and then catch the wave as it comes through.
And closer to the pocket.
Closer so you're to basically the pocket, just, basically swooping the wave, you know, which is a big, big, you know, issue in California, I feel like. Because, like, if you go to other places where, you know, in Mexico, where there's a few people surfing and it's a point break, there's like this hierarchy of people. And as you sit and wait your turn, and then the wave comes through and you catch the wave and then you paddle back out, and it becomes like this conveyor belt of turns happening. Whereas where we live, there's so many people surfing and, you know, only a few sets coming in at a certain time. And it's just it's a full paddle battle. You go to trestles, you know, lowers mm-hmm. is like one of the most like coveted waves or known waves in California. And you sit there and watch people, and it's going to be a paddle battle all day. But you'll get crap in the water if people notice that you keep back paddling you,
right.
you know, or you keep back paddling them, because people wait their turn. And then if they see you catch a wave, and then you're constantly going behind them, they'll definitely say something.
And even at Terramar, I mean, there are these areas, right, where the waves definitely peak better, but they seem like they kind of shift and move a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not like a point break, right?
For sure.
It's always very dependable.
There is a very definite right and a very definite left there. But again, with different swell directions, like sometimes it'll work. You'll notice there's more people on that left in the summertime, you know, because it's a typically more of a south breaking wave. And then you'll notice Ponto breaks more in the south. And then in the winters, it's not really working. So it's another thing too that gets frustrating is, you know, as I've lived here for probably 8-10 years now, or like in California for longer than that, you learn where you live. And when you surf all the time, you have to learn the waves and learn the tide and the swell direction. And with Surfline putting cameras on every wave here, I can wake up, look at my camera and be like, oh, it looks good, you know? Or if they say, oh, the mid-morning window between blah, blah, blah times is the time to go, you'll notice that is when like everyone's there. You know, if it's orange and it says it's good at Oceanside Harbor, you're going to have heaps more people out there if it didn't say 2 to 3.
That's why I look for the poor conditions.
Yeah,
like,
totally. Exactly. It's crazy though, because I've surfed so many days that are like actually good and it says they're not good.
Yeah.
Or you'll surf really good days that say they're good and they're actually really bad.
Right.
You know, and so it's sad for me. I mean, I'm guilty of looking at cameras too, you know, but when it's like, I kind of have a hunch where something's going to be good, but if someone's just looking at an angle on a camera, you know, Cardiff has 3 different cameras on one wave, there's going to be way more people in the water. If you go up to Santa Barbara, they've done a really good job of like not allowing cameras anywhere. So Rincon, a very world-class wave, will say 1 to 2, like all the time, you know, and there's no way those guys are going to let a camera go up.
It's incredible. I was just there this weekend.
Yeah.
And the city is also unbelievable. I mean, I went to school there 30 years ago and it looks like the exact same city that I left 30 years ago.
I love it.
And they've just kept it so, I mean, it's also one of the most expensive places to live now, right?
Exactly.
It's not for everybody, but I had no idea about the cameras. That's good. They protected the waves. That's good.
Yeah. They try their best. And I admire that about the surf culture in some aspects where it's very like, kind of like a hush-hush thing in a lot of places. I mean, I do my due diligence of like traveling to Mexico in the winters and try to find those spots and putting in the work to figure it out. And it's kind of like a rule, like, oh, if you find something good, you don't talk about it, you don't post about it. And nowadays everybody's on Instagram and everyone's watching the cameras or, you know, everyone's surfing. So it's like, it's really hard. I even told my friend, I was like, man, I wish, like this morning, I was like, I wish there was still more like secret waves in California because, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to surf Swamis. And I get up and there's already 20 people on it because Surfline says it's 3 to 4 and fair.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'll just go to Grandview. There's less people here. And then you get out and there's like 20 people there, you know? So
I know. On the train back, I was wondering like the whole Camp Pendleton base, there must be so many secret waves there because you can't even, right? So much of it is inaccessible.
And so with that comes like, I, again, was a beginner surfer, you know, at an older age learning. And so I teach surfing. So it's like, you want people to experience that. I teach to a lot of like younger kids or kids from other countries who have never been to the ocean or don't know how to swim. And so I love when they get excited about surfing. So it's like this constant battle where I'm like, I want it to myself and then I want people to know how fun this is.
Right.
So I think that that's like the culmination of, okay, how do we make it to where people are doing this in the right way? If you go to Ventura and Santa Cruz, there's big placards on the beach that say, this is surf etiquette, not how to like snaking people or dropping in on them. Or this is, you don't back paddle someone, or this person has priority and it'll have like an arrow. And if they're going this way, or say you're going back out into the wave, that's always a hard thing to navigate because you see someone beelining it down a wave right at you. A lot of people, 9 times out of 10, are going to try to paddle their hardest to get like out of your way around the wave and not take the whitewash, you know? But etiquette is
you take the whitewash,
let them be, you know, there's so many times I've had to get kick off of a good wave because someone's sitting like right in the spot you want to do a turn or get back into the pocket. And it's frustrating, you know, because you're out there sitting for 30 minutes to an hour or whatever, waiting your turn, trying to be kind about it. And then when you're you're just navigating on the inside of the wave now at that point and trying not to hit anybody or someone dropping in on you on the inside or something because they're learning. So it's stuff like that where you just kind of have to think about it. And unfortunately, surfing is like a very selfish sport. And so it's not like, you know, unless someone's yelling party wave and everyone can go, and that's a verbal like declaration that it's not, you know, you're not snaking anybody. But most of the time people are going to be like fighting for it.
Okay. So we have not dropping in or understanding right. where you are located and who has right mm-hmm. to the wave, not back paddling.
Yeah.
And then taking the whitewash on the head, right?
Yeah.
If somebody's on the wave, right, you mm-hmm. let them enjoy their wave.
Yeah.
Any other thing that you think is really key to mention?
Yeah. It all comes down to like where you're at too and what the waves are looking like. It's more acceptable for people at like a beginner wave, be going out there and having these, you know, things going on. The biggest thing is making sure you're safe. And surfing is intimidating, especially as a female going into it. I know a lot of friends that started out surfing and they're like, it's just so nerve-wracking, like being the only girl out there or seeing all these guys surfing, you know. So it's also giving yourself some grace to like, you know, you're figuring it out. But the top things I think are like not dropping in on people, you know, not back paddling and then trying your best to get out of people's way. I mean, you never know if a longboarder is going to fade left if they're super styly and you're like, well, I can't read your mind. I don't know what you're going to do on a wave. So, and I'm super guilty of being like, I can paddle around this, you know, and then being in the worst spot, you know? And so we all have to give each other grace. And it's also just this common knowledge of how many waves have you been catching? And maybe you've been catching every set wave. So take a break. Let other people catch waves. You know, you don't want to be the person out there hogging everything. You know, I have a few friends where I'm like, I don't really like surfing with them because they just surf circles around you and they don't think about other people. And so that's something you would just consider after time too, once you are going, you know, don't paddle for every wave. If you're new, I get it. It's like everything looks like it's a surfable wave and you're going to get really tired because half the waves aren't going to be that. And the first few months or years is you figuring out the timing of a wave, you know, do you sit, you know, really far out and let them roll under you? Or do you sit right as the lip's like going to land on your head, you know? So figuring out how to read those things, but also being considerate of other people. It's really tough when or a beginner surfer, like paddling for every wave and not really considering other people or, you know, cause if they're beginning, they also are going to not really know like how to manage their board once they're moving, you know?
Right. And they're probably not yeah. having that 360 view.
Totally. Anyways. So yeah. It's like, they might not even drop in on you, but they might land on you uh-huh. or fall. So there's a lot of times like this morning, two beginner surfers, were paddling kind of sandwiching me and, you know, it would have been such a fun wave, but I knew going into it, just looking at it, at them and where they were sitting on their board and how they were paddling, I was like, I don't know if I want to put myself in this spot
right.
because they're both going to drop in no matter what, and they're not going to be able to control what they're doing, and I'm going to be stuck in the middle. So I don't want to, I'm on a new board that's not even mine that I'm demoing. I don't want to break it, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, it's just being considerate of other people, which is hard because you want to catch waves and, you know, and tell that to the local guy who's been here 20 years, like he's going to catch whatever wave he wants, even if it means every set wave, you know?
Right.
So it's hard. And I'd hope to teach people to like take time to talk to people who are beginning too and be like, hey, are you new here? Like, you know, how long have you been surfing? Or, hey, maybe sit over here. Or, you know, try to watch where you're going, you know, and be kind about it. I've definitely have taken time out of my surf session to try to like help other people, and the groms that I mentor like, I would never do that. You know, they don't want them in the water, you know? But yeah, I think it's just being mindful because I grew up in doing all these other sports that are more conducive to other people, like rock climbing and snowboarding and all these things. And you kind of learn as you go, but there's also rules around it. And, so you would just hope that surfing would have that too. You know, like snowboarding is always like people downhill have the right of way. You see these signs everywhere
right.
as you're going up the lift or whatever. And then you get to the ocean and people don't even know if they're getting into a wave that's way too big for them. You know, like I remember surfing growing, like, you know, starting out, and I didn't know wave size, you know. There's so many times I shouldn't have been in the water. So learning your limits too, for sure, and being safe.
Well, why, can you go into your history of surfing a little bit now that you're...
Yeah.
So you said you grew up in Texas as a snowboarder, right?
Yeah, well, kind of. I started skiing in high school, and then when I... in like snowboarding, then when I graduated, I went and taught snowboarding in Colorado. I swam a ton. I grew up competitive swimming, and then grew up, you know, wakeboarding and doing some climbing and stuff like that. And then when I moved to California after guiding for a few years up in the mountains, I was like, I want to learn how to surf and I want to be by the beach. A lot of people from other states are like, oh, surfing's so cool. They're, you know, they go to Hawaii and all these tropical places. And I grew up swimming, so I was like, I feel like I'd really like this. So I moved to Orange County, and I was living with a family that I had met like on a road trip. I just kind of showed up and they were like, come live with us. And so he had a bunch of boards. He was super generous, super hospitable, and was like, take whatever you want, whenever you want to go. And so I bought a used wetsuit, or I started on a 9.0, and then I was riding like a 7.6 Ellington or something like that every day before work.
How long before you made that jump, drop down?
Pretty quickly. I think I was trying the longboard for, I don't know, maybe like a couple months. And I remember at Bolsa Chica Beach, I was on a longboard and I was like, I'm ready to ride a face wave. And then fully purled, hit my head on the bottom of the sand, compressed my neck. And I was like, you know, that was really gnarly and I don't want to do that. And I think I just realized I was on this big board that I didn't know, like, how to maneuver at like a beach break. And so I was like, I'm going to try a shorter board. And also, people just think, how do I get to a shortboard as fast as possible? Because that's what the surf culture is like. Shortboards are cool. And I would just say, if you're starting out, like, be okay with being on a longboard. Be okay with having foam under you and learning the wave. And then as you progress, then go smaller. I think I was in that mindset of like, oh, longboarding, I don't want to be on a longboard. So I jumped ship really quickly. But as I've taught and as I've gotten older, I'm like, that's not really, you don't really need to just do that because you're just going to be frustrated. And I was pretty frustrated jumping from a 9.0 to like a 7.6. Yeah, I figured it out and I was surfing Newport and Huntington. And so those are mostly beach breaks. You go surf out near Blackies or any of the jetty waves. You take like 3 strokes and you're in the lineup. You know, it's really close to shore. I learned at Blackies Beach, and I would just take my board and sit in the car and watch people for like 30 minutes. And at first it was pretty intimidating because I didn't know what I was doing. And I had maybe one surf lesson from a friend, like, who kind of just, I mean, I'm guilty of this, but you teach someone like the little like quick and easy, and they're like, all right, see you out there. And then you just totally bail on them and they're like, well, I don't know where I am. And so I would just sit and watch people, like how they put their wetsuits on, where they're paddling out, how they're standing up on a wave. And I would just do that like every morning. Definitely got humbled a lot, and surfing still humbles me for sure. Like, it's definitely the hardest thing I've ever learned how to do, and it's constantly changing, which I think is what I've drawn to the challenge by. You know, it's kind of addicting to like want to be, you know, in such a fast shifting sport, you know, like you're trying to catch a moving wave, like in the ocean, you know, like it's really difficult.
It's thrilling.
Yeah, it's awesome, but also very frustrating. Yeah. You're like, I've been doing this every day for 8 years. You'd think I'd be a pro by now, you know? There's days you feel like I've got it, and there's days where you're like, have I even surfed, you know? But yeah, I started surfing out there, and then I, you know, traveled a bit for it, got really into it, and then kind of after moving around a bit, I've landed in San Diego and have call this home for a little while, but
yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. I started on a wave storm for a little while, but then I got a friend of mine shape the board I ride now, which is a 7 foot.
Yeah, the thing looks awesome.
A lot of foam, but I'm wanting to move now to a longboard, or at least have a longboard, because I feel like there are these skills, right? That you, and I've been told this from a few people, that you'll be able to catch more waves more often and just build those basic skills a little bit faster.
For sure.
And I had this one wheel. It was like one of those impulsive purchases. And then I realized I have no business being on a one wheel where I'm going to fall and hit cement. I want to just, you know, be in the water. I'll fall, you know, fall in the water. So I just sold it and I've got just a little bit of cash. So I'm going to start looking for a long wheel.
I love it.
Super excited.
Yeah. And the cool thing about surfing is there's so many options. It's gotten to the point where it's not just longboard and then like super gnarly high performance shortboard that's like a potato chip. There's all these in between funky shapes and mid-links and fishes and ASIMs and all these things that do different, you know, things on the wave. And so I've really valued surfing a bunch of different kinds of boards because it just makes you a better surfer, I think. And also when it's small, like, you're going to be really frustrated if you're on a mid-length, you know, whereas if it's tiny, you can have a lot more fun on a longboard, you know. And then as you progress, then you can shift into more like shortboard world, you know. I only longboard when it's pretty small.
Right.
But it's so beautiful to watch people who are good at it. And I have so many friends who are just so good at longboarding, you know, and I'm like, wow, this is awesome. I'm more of like a shortboard kind of like feeling a little bit more racy is my vibe, but I also really admire people who are like all around at surfing.
I was also so intrigued by the way you've set up your life.
Totally.
Like, say you're a swim instructor, teach some surf about 5 months out of the year.
And then, seven.
Or seven. Oh, yeah. The opposite way. And then 5 months, so you're saving and you're pretty frugal, right? And then for the other 5 months, you can travel.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of your time is yours. So talk a little bit about how you set things up that way.
Yeah. I got a degree in Parks and Rec in college and with like an emphasis on youth development. And so right out of the gate, I was doing guiding work. And so I already was in a seasonal pattern of work where I'd be here for 3 months and there for 4 months and, you know, bouncing around doing different, you know, snowboard, rock climbing, those kinds of things. But that was like, I was living out of my car and like bouncing around different national parks. And that's fun. And you're like early 20s. But as I became like an older 20s, I was kind of like losing steam of the whole van life vibe. You know, I was like, I'd like to live in a house and host people. I kind of got over being like the one being hosted. And so I kind of landed in San Diego and I was still guiding a little bit, but then I was working for like a coffee place. And it's just been in my nature to like mentor young girls and take them on trips and stuff. And so I've always tried to work in places that would allow that to be my first priority. And as COVID hit, I lost my job to the coffee industry. And so I was just traveling. I was like, well, I can't work. You know, I tried really hard to get a job and everyone was on lockdown. I landed on a sailboat for like 20 days and then I was camping in Mexico a bunch. And then my friend called me and was like, hey, we're looking for more swim instructors. And at first I was like, no way, I'm not doing that again. I was an instructor when I was a young kid. So it felt like I was kind of rewinding, you know, but then I met the boss. She's super wonderful, wonderful schedule, pays well. And, you know, we get 3 day weekends and then you're off. So in next week I finish.
Yeah. Great.
I know. So you work really, really hard from like March to October. And you're in the pool all day long working with kids. But then when you're off, the season's over because people aren't heating their pools in the middle of December and stuff. And I don't think I would last if I did that full time because you're in the pool for like 7 hours a day. But yeah, I try really hard. I don't spend a lot of money and I live in a trailer currently.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. And my friends have really blessed me with a spot to stay because I kind of got kicked out of my house right before work. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm about to start my job. Where am I going to live? Uh-huh. And some friends bought a house and they're like, why don't you just stay next door? And then another family just offered to let me use their trailer. So I've just been fully covered by blessings by them. And so that'll probably change once my season ends because then I'll probably be traveling a bit. It's a little stressful because I'm not from here. So it's not like, oh, I'll just go crash with my parents for a while. You know, it's like once you're up, you're up.
Right.
So there's a lot of decisions to be made, but I try really hard to play a lot on my off season. And I don't know if I'll continue the swim thing, maybe in the future. But the biggest thing is, yeah, just keeping in mind what you're passionate about and making that, like I said, the girls are my forefront of my mind as far as how do you mentor, how do you be a good example. And so planning trips for them. And
so how do you connect with these girls that you mentor? How is that?
Yeah. So I've met a lot of them through surfing and then some friends and I did like a little skate ministry when I first moved here. And so kids would come over to the backyard and skate. And so I met some young people there, and then I volunteer for Christian Surfers as well. And I think I just see these young girls in the water, and I'm just drawn to talking to them. I think they're so cool, and like love that they're charging and kind of like sticking it to the man, you know, because surfing is such a male dominant sport. So like you saw me with all the ladies, it's like, I love when all the girls paddle out, because guys don't tend to talk too much to each other, depending on where you're at, but girls just like talking. And I see them in that world surfing, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, they send it on all these crazy waves, and they love surfing hard. What would they be like if we went backpacking or rock climbing or snowboarding? And kind of giving them those first experiences has been like so fun for me.
What would you say is the average age that you
were? Probably like 15 to like 22.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay.
A big range. And I've known the 22-year-olds since they were 15. Uh-huh. So now they have little micrograms that they bring around, and so there's just this little chain reaction happening.
They
and
just keep passing it.
In my world, like, I really value relationship with God and what that means to kind of disciple the younger generation into like living fully and being good examples and good people in the world. And so it's like, what better way to just hang out with like all these young kids and try to like surround them with good positive energy rather than like what they're seeing in the surf world or on TikTok or something dumb like that, you know?
Yeah, and they're going to get all of those tips and pointers that we both want. You wanted, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like currently seeking out every time I'm on the water. It's so helpful when somebody offers that hand or that little extra bit of help, right? You appreciate it so much in those early days, I think.
Yeah. And like seeing where they're at now, like I don't hang out with the older ones as much because they're like bringing the little younger ones in, and it's cool. Like I wish at that age I had someone hitting me up and taking me on trips. That's kind of what I'd hope to give them. And then they teach me about surfing all the time. You know, I was in Hawaii with a few of them, and this is a young girl named Taylor. She's like 16. She's like, if you would have stalled for like 2 seconds, you would have been totally barreled, you know, like, well, you're my surf coach. Tell me what to do, you know? So it's fun surfing with them too, because they've been doing this forever, and I'm the old lady out there with them, just kind of like putting around. And so I think they like keep me like kind of young and like wanting to try new things too. And then I try to take them on stuff to get them all riled up and doing other things too besides surfing, because sometimes they can only get stuck in their little, and their little bubbles.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm really inspired by what you're working on and, you know, all of the mentoring. I think that's fantastic.
For sure.
So just tell me real quick. So what are you doing now that your 5 months is about to start? What's the plan? Just one thing?
I don't really have much planned. Okay. I'm going to the Outer Banks in North Carolina to visit a friend who we both, she's got a little girl crew on the Outer Banks, and we've done a few trips out there to see them and get all the girls in the whole U.S. kind of frothing on each other. So I'm going to go visit her, and there's a camp out happening out there. And then we have a Christian Surfers International gathering coming up. So a lot of international surfers are going to be all in Carlsbad for a week, all surfing together and kind of having this fun fellowship of, oh, you live in Nicaragua, oh, you live in Costa Rica, like getting connected and making friends. And I just bought a dirt bike, so I'm gearing that up for Mexico, getting a surf rack on it, kind of trying to convince all my friends to buy little dirt bikes to take down there. I'm an instigator. It's bad. But yeah, definitely going to spend some time in Mexico, and who knows? I have a lot of question marks I have to figure out, but I'm trusting God always works things out for our good. And so I'm just like, all right, here we are. I get anxious about it sometimes, being like, what am I doing? I'm 32. I'm still not like figured out, but you know, who cares?
No, it's great. It's a good model and a good way to be. Thank you so much, Riley.
Of course.
It was really great to meet you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, can't wait to see you on the water again.
Yeah, we're going to have to do another ladies' day.
Yes.
It'd be great.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing. And if you feel inclined to leave a kind review, I would greatly appreciate it. I hope you'll stay tuned for the next Surf Tale on the Wilding 50 podcast.